I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World. It's been nearly a week since a 7.0 magnitude earthquake devastated Haiti. Estimates of the number of killed are ranging as high as 200,000, and international aid is only just starting to get through to those in need. This survivor spoke for many of his compatriots.
We don't have no houses. Most of the houses destroyed. Even the houses stand up, people scared to sleep on them. Most of these people don't eat since Tuesday night. Last night, they threw food in the street. We can't even get them.
The BBC's Nick Davis is in Haiti's capital, Port-au-Prince. He says most Haitians are still waiting for aid.
They've heard the C-130s flying in, the military transport planes, the Antonovs, knowing that on board is the aid and the supplies which they so vitally need. But yet, you go in the street and you ask people, have you got any water? Have you got any supplies? Have the aid agencies reached you? Have the US military reached you? And they say no. And it's that which is causing the insecurity, because you have to bear in mind that there was always a problem here. Things have improved in the recent years, but even so, in situations like this, people do what they can for their families, and that is what the real concern is for people like Ban Ki-moon, the UN Secretary General. He's calling for more troops on the ground. He's calling for more peacekeepers. The US are putting more troops here. An estimated 12,000 of them are expected to arrive at some point during the course of the day. So that's the reason why they're concerned about insecurity, and people here as well can start to feel that maybe the mood is changing amongst their countrymen.
So nearly a week on from the earthquake, Nick, why is it so hard now still getting the aid to the people who need it?
It's a combination of factors. We knew about the bottleneck which existed at the airport. There was a real problem with the initial air traffic control, which was being run by the Haitians. They were then sort of allowed to cede control, or maybe you never cede control. It was taken away from them by the US authorities, who believed that they could do a better job. So American air traffic controllers speeded up the process. Once they did that, it meant that supplies not only landed but were unloaded quicker. Another problem now is that it's very difficult to be able to move the aid around. There are real problems getting fuel into the country. Every day we journalists have to go on missions to try and find petrol, to find diesel, to fire up our generators so that we can broadcast from the earthquake zone.
What is going to happen with that fuel situation? Because the UN warned today that it is so dire that, as you say, road deliveries of aid are in jeopardy, and so are the mobile phone networks. So aid and communication could get shut down if there isn't enough fuel.
That's right. The situation which we've been doing is we've been trying to bus fuel across from other countries, mainly, of course, the neighbouring nation. And so that's one thing to do. The other way is to be able to go around the city trying to find fuel, which is being sold at very high prices. It's gone up by 3 times the price that it was before Tuesday. That's the other way. Clearly, that's not what's going to be done by other relief organisations. But, you know, as you say, it's needed. It's vital for the movement of aid. It's vital for the communications network, which, you know, most of the communications networks use generators to power their huge towers. Without that, it's going to make life here on the ground, and also the coordination of the aid, even more difficult. You know, this country has got the second largest number of NGOs in the world. Now, you sort of put that into the equation, you put the US into the equation, you put the UN into the equation. That's a lot of coordination which needs to be done.
And is it your sense that it's clear who's coordinating things? Is it clear who's in charge?
When you go to the airport, it's very clear that the US is in charge, because there are lots of GIs who ask for your passport and want to check your identification. If you're a US citizen, you're allowed in. If you're a journalist, you're allowed in. If you're Haitian, you're not. So it's very clear that in that respect, the airport has become a de facto part of the United States. But elsewhere on the ground, people are, in some respects, doing things themselves. These are some of the most resilient people I've ever seen in my life, and they've been dealing with this sort of reality, not earthquakes, but, you know, horrible disasters. You know, they faced 4 hurricanes within a month in 2008. The world did stuff, but it didn't do a lot. And then, you know, we zoom in and then disappear out. Hopefully, some people are looking at this situation and hoping that there may be a silver lining, that the world will see what the situation is like for this poor country, and actually that they can actually start a rebuilding process here.
The BBC's Nick Davis in Haiti's capital, Port-au-Prince.